and after the service of God and his angels, after the earth has been encircled with their love and purity, after the days of darkness have passed, a new earth, a pure earth, appears. A viceless world, a non-violent world, a world of natural purity, where there is natural balance and respect, a family of divine beings, living naturally in virtue. No thought, no effort, no process to become. They are the embodiment of truth, of love, of purity. This world, there is complete peace and harmony. In this world, which is now like a garden, there is a sense of natural belonging. A natural oneness. Whoever it is, all feel they belong to one family. There is the natural spirituality of peace, of happiness. Relationships are possible because each one is complete. When each soul is complete, then a relationship of respect and love functions naturally. I see this world, this golden world, this gift from my Father. I see this world and I belong there. Now, as a charioteer, I am learning, I am moving, I am balancing. But my final destination is that world, the world of my brother souls, who are the embodiment of happiness, nature. Nature is in happiness also. Belong there. I, the charioteer, I understand. This world here must change, but I must change first to create the bridge to that golden world for myself and for others to move across. and this world. I fill the self with the purity of my Father. I surrender to his task, and we become co-creators, co-sustainers, co-transformers. The Father, the Self, and my brother souls. My brothers, my sisters, have also become charioteers and instruments. And the golden world is appearing. It's coming. I know this. I feel this. I remain in the awareness of the self, the learner, the one who must transform. And I remain aware of my eternal home, my angelic task, and the golden world of happiness. Happiness. Peace. Dissolve sorrow. Happiness. Liberation. In life. The golden consciousness is this.
Om Shanti, and welcome to this session that's called Entering the Golden Age, a conversation well worth hearing. So today we have, my name is Sister Margaret of UK, and we have two brothers in this birth born in Australia, and we have Brother David and Brother Jeff. And many of you know Brother David well because he looks after the art department here in Gyan Sarovar and lives in Gyan Sarovar for many, many years, and also is a musician, so we've heard his music often. And when there's programs, often he plays live too. And then Jeff is based in full-time in Shantivan. And I know that you do animations for Baba. I think Baba's trained you in animation. And Jeff, certainly I got to know him because he came to the UK for a period of time and was working diligently in the corner of the office on hours at time on animations. So welcome. And we just had that lovely video that by Brother Anthony that set us in the consciousness of the Golden Age. And so our conversation today is about, really, I'm not sure what you do to create your consciousness of the Golden Age, so I think that's the starting point, really. So maybe I'll go straight to David and, you know, for the next free flow 8 minutes or so, you know, talk about, how do you create your... What do you do to get to the Golden Age, David?
Yes, I think Golden Age is something I feel... I felt from when coming into Gyan. And and I feel that it's like when we're... Like, I guess it's sort of been a lot connected with nature as well. And just that sort of feeling of... Also just wanting to be happy, all the time happy. And it was interesting just hearing Anthony's commentary, because part of, as we know, of course, in Golden Ages, you know, peace, love and happiness. So this happiness part, and thinking, how can I always be happy? But also it's like, I guess the consciousness behind it is a lot of silence as well, keeping just a feeling of like... Because as we know in Golden Age, a lot of the conversation is happening through the eyes. So language-wise, it's like there's a communication which is happening, which is not necessarily that we're coming into sound. So there's a very, very, very subtle there. And I think just having the experience here in Gyan Sarovar for many years, being... not a Hindi speaker as such, a lot of the sort of contact with souls, and that is, you know, it's even the experience of that, that there's not necessarily the language as a first communication, actually verbal language. It's happening on another level, which is sort of like understood, naturally understood. And of course, just the feeling of... when everything's really, when my consciousness is in a space where, of course, it's peaceful, that aspect of purity and love is there. And I feel sometimes it's like when connecting, especially with nature and the animals, the birds and all these types of things, it's like when there's a subtlety there which I feel... when we're silent, the mind is still, like just the observer experience. It's like there's a connection with the nature, which is very, it's a very practical thing where it's almost like the animals will come closer. There's, and it's like, of course, with food and feeding, but it's almost like that sort of gives the experience too of, you know, like a time when we did live in, when we were in the Golden Age, and there was this natural connection with all the elements and nature, the animals and that, and there's no fear as well. because this is one of the things which happens when we don't have fear. Of course, the wildlife does come closer to us. It's a natural sort of, if they feel there's no fear, then there's this connection. And over the years here, from my own experience, there's been birds that come on the hand and the squirrels and like these types of things, which are like, it's sort of like, it's like a feeling and a glimpse of that in golden age when we're connected with the nature and the animals.
I mean, I think for some of us that come here, you know, some of the animals or insects or little lizards, it's not that familiar to us. So it can create a disturbance because we're not used to it. You know, if you suddenly see it plastered on your wall or in the bedroom, it's a bit, you know, confronting because you're not used to it. But because you've lived here, and maybe because there's a kind of purification process that goes on with that, the animal kingdom, do you feel that you've got used to it as well? So you...
Yeah, it's like, I guess sort of, I've had sort of feelings too of like this whole thing of like, every life form has an essence of life or a spark of whatever makes everything move. No, we say, okay, the soul is in the body. When the soul leaves, it takes another rebirth. Well, I think in even the animals and all forms of life has some form of, there's that energy which is the life force. So there's almost like a natural respect for all that, you know. And sometimes I feel even in, you know, not to walk on, you know, ants or, you know, to kill anything that's in a life form. So... And most things, like even my experience before, just before coming to Gyan, you know, I lived in the forest and I lived with a lot of animals around. And it was almost like when you're very still, sometimes these animals come in and sometimes they would crawl over you and you just observe and most of the time they would just continue on their way. It usually what happens if there's a fear and then I try to, you know, brush that off or react, that's the time when it's almost like it's a threat also to that. And so I experienced, like, you just become the observer. And most things, they will not bite unless you react. So, but it's that getting into that space where you can allow that, you know. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we, like you said, we can be a bit fearful of something or some animal or insect or whatever, but...
And that
truth.
Brings us right back into this kind of dimension, doesn't it? It brings us right back to a kind of Iron Age body consciousness. It's a very different kind of energy, isn't it, than what you're talking about?
Yeah, and of course, you know, a lot of the things now that even in the wildlife and animals, of course, when they've been hunted and exploited like that, of course, there's a fear. And there's a sort of, they'll just run away. They won't come close at all because it's... You know, in Gyan Sarovar, there's been many over the years, the different wildlife and the birds that come in. And you can see how when they first come into Gyan Sarovar, they're very, very timid and they're very shy. But then after a while, they realize, okay, no one's after them. No one wants to eat them. and so slowly, slowly, they become closer and they become more familiar and more familiar and more familiar. And then until a point where... You know, I've even myself, I've had them, you know, land on the hand or on the arm and feeding them, you know. So, but this happens slowly, slowly over time when there's a natural sort of, you know, progression of no fear of humans or. So, you know, that's.
I noticed that in Om Shanti Retreat Center, there's like this one tree and the birds that are in that tree, they're like so happy. They are just chirping all through the day and just. When you walk near that tree, you just feel these birds know the secret of the universe. They know about constant happiness. We're trying to work it out, but they've already done it. Just one more question to you, David, and then we'll go over to Jeff, is that through your music, you know, they talk about when a musician kind of goes into the zone, it's almost like they go beyond the music. Have you had any kind of golden age experiences through the music?
Well, I feel... From the start of playing music, I felt there should be music everywhere. So there's a real feeling of this sort of subtle sound of music. And sometimes that's just with the nature, with the wind in the trees, in the leaves, and that type of thing. But while playing, it's been very much the experience, especially now, how to use sound to create silence, that type of thing. So mm-hmm. I guess the practice has been to use being so such a deep meditative space that you're sort of almost like you become like the sound, in a sense of is a lot of concentration. And I feel when we're in that sort of state, or you know, while playing, then of course it becomes meditation music, because it's almost like you've gone beyond sound. Even though you're playing the sound, the instrument, then you become the instrument also. And then there's a feeling of like you're not actually doing anything. You know, mm-hmm. it's almost like you're just creating a sound or a soundscape where it's really in that state beyond. And I think that's sort of, I mean, I'm sure in golden age, you know, when we just, you know, just naturally will just play something, you know, it's not like, you know, sometimes it used to fascinate me when we play music, that if you went for a walk in the park and you just played the flute, for example, or guitar or something, you know, many times people will come along and say, you're just playing, is there a program or something, you know? And you say, no, I'm just playing. And I'll look around and think, but what program? No program, I'm just playing, you know. But, you know, it's almost like we're so far from that space where we can just express or just play or dance or do anything just naturally. We think we have to be in a program or something. But, of course, golden age, that's mm-hmm. our life. You know, everyone's an artist, everyone's a... You know, all the arts we're just doing naturally, and it's just like, it's just our life, you know. So somebody might just start to sing or dance, and then somebody else might play, someone else will join in. It's just very spontaneous and natural.
Mm.
So that sort of...
Beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. In the main Murali Prabhupada's talked about the golden age. He talks about that we'll be able to play naturally and easily, and he talks about sounds of the birds will wake us up, and he in that Murali he talks, there is quite a lot of reference to the beauty of sound. So over to Jeff, have you had any visions of the golden age? How do you get into the golden age experience?
When I came to Baba, it was a cycle that brought me into Gyan. And I never thought about the golden age when I came to Baba. It was mostly about the secrets of Shiv Baba, soul consciousness, and the cycle. And it was only when I was attending this particular center in Bondi in Sydney for a couple of years, and then we used to have these butties for 2 to 3 hours back in those days, and you'd be sitting on the floor, there'd be no chairs back in those days. And but I, at one of these butties, I had a vision of the golden age. I was standing in a palace and just admiring the column. I can't remember details. You know, I couldn't tell you what the column or the arch or, you know, the design. But what it was seeing someone else in that vision and seeing the soul of that deity in that vision, who was putting a tray of flowers on the table. And that was my first, it was the catalyst for actually to get me thinking about the golden age, because before that it wasn't, of course you hear it in the Muralis, but it wasn't for me a focus of my efforts at that time. And it was only after that vision that that vision also had like that experience to give me a message. In that vision, I could very, very clearly see the soul of the other person, you know, the deity that was putting this tray of flowers on the table, and the soul was so clear you could actually see it. And I guess because that the third eye is 100% open, that even though, you know, we're surrounded by the body, you know, that we sit inside the body, that with the third eye you can still see the soul. And it got me thinking, I guess that's how when Shivbaba comes in the body, even though he's using the eyes, he's using his third eye to see all the children, you know, because he says his vision is only on the souls of all the children. And so that was my first taste of the Golden Age, was that vision. And that prompted me to start thinking a little bit about it. And at the same center, I think maybe 6 months, 8 months later, I had a second vision of the Golden Age, which was a princess. And she was kneeling down, feeding little animals that were coming to her, you know. But the experience of that one was that she had this amazing aura of purity. I mean, her purity was like, I was like literally taken aback by her, I guess, energy and purity that she had. And then she looked at me, and it is like, I guess, in the pictures, like they show, I guess, saints and deities with an aura of light. It was literally, I guess, because her purity was so strong, you know, they depict it like that. And so after that, I had a third one about a year later, which was standing on a hill overlooking an enormous palace. I mean, it was huge. It went on for so long. But it was not just the building. It was gardens and courtyards and fountains and, you know, people were doing something there and people were doing something there, and it was massive, you know. But after that, then it all stopped. That sort of stuff stopped. So then I had to consciously use my intellect and the experiences in yoga in order to give myself the feeling of what Golden Age would be like. And I still do that even now. I mean, the other morning I was sitting in Shantivan, and of course in Shantivan it's very hot. It's getting up to 40 degrees down there. And in the mornings at Murali, a couple of mornings I sat in a seat in Old Diamond House, behind Diamond Hall. And if you look at New Diamond House, there's actually quite a nice garden in front of New Diamond House. And every time I looked at it, I got the feeling that there was a super... I'm from a graphical background and animation, so there's a superimposing an image of like the Golden Age. It's almost like projecting what I'm seeing now with the physical eyes, but it's not me doing it. I guess because if you have enough yoga and you practice, I mean, Baba will automatically give you an experience. So, but it was like it was superimposed over the top of the garden I was looking at. So, and I find that is happening quite a lot lately. For me, and I guess because, I mean, lately, I mean, especially in the last 2 years because of lockdown, I got locked down in Australia for 2 years, then I concentrated more on yoga, serving through the mind, and of course why we're actually doing what we're doing, you know, our aim and objective. And I started thinking a lot more consciously about the Golden Age. And so I guess because of more yoga and consciously thinking more about it, then Baba's there in the subtle region. It's waiting to give us an experience, you know. But we have to take the first step. We have to actually make that effort, you know. Baba's always said, you take one step, a Baba will take two steps towards you, you know. So, I mean, for me, that's been really, really nice. It's becoming like an automatic thing where I just see a scene and there's like this layer on top of it of what it could be like in the Golden Age, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. So it's really, really nice in that sense. And so that it's becoming a natural practice. I mean, it happened... I mean, many years ago, I mean, when I was in Australia, when I go to Australia, I live at their retreat centre, Baxter, in Melbourne. And one day I was in the small town of Frankston, which is on the shore of a huge bay, and the sun sets on the water. And I happened to be there, so I walked over to the beach, and there was no one there. And it was a really beautiful sunset, I mean, through the clouds and on the water. And I had some yoga, and I was just looking at it, and I was actually talking to Baba, and I said, wow, this is nature at the end of the cycle. Imagine what it's going to be like in the golden age. And all of a sudden it was like, I wasn't there, it wasn't a vision, but I was standing on a beach in the golden age, and the vibrancy of the matter, the energy that was radiating from everything, from the ocean, from the beach, from everything, was just absolutely amazing. You could feel it, you know. And again, I guess because when you use Baba and you use the knowledge to give yourself an experience, Baba helps as well. So Baba gave that experience while I was like chatting to him. Wow, this is amazing, Baba, you know, this nature. So he said, this is what it's like, you know, in the future. So that was a really nice experience. And so I've started doing that more and more, just sort of like, and anywhere I sit, which is nice, I can sit in a few places, like in here in Gyantsarova or in Shantivan, especially in a nice garden with lots of flowers, you know, because that gives a really nice feeling of what it's going to be like in the golden age. So, I mean, it's a nice practice to keep doing, and you get some nice experiences from it, yeah. So that's my...
I mean, I'd like to pick up this idea of a practice, because I think many of us, you know, we're quite focused in the confluence age, you know, we're practicing... You know, it's a big thing even to practice the angelic stage, isn't it? And be this point of light, incorporeal. And you could spend a lot of your time doing that. But, you know, Baba puts the golden age as one of the five forms. And he also, every Murli, he mentions, like today he said, you know, I am the creator of heaven. You know, this is what, it's almost like we want, yeah. Sometimes I feel maybe we want to hang on to the confluence age because we've still got Baba. And in the golden age, we're not going to have Baba, but he has come to create heaven. So he wants us to get on, he wants to do his task. You know, there's people suffering out in the world. He wants us to get on and bring heaven in. So there's a great line from a movie. I think it's Alice Through the Looking Glass. And in the first 5 minutes, she says this great statement, and that is, only when you believe the impossible to be possible can it become possible. And I think the other line from, I mean, I think it's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, is something like, if you believe it, you can achieve it. So there's this whole aspect of, for all of us, how much do we really believe that we are these deities? And just the last thought, that the points in the Murli that kind of strike me a lot in the last little while is when Baba asks questions like, how did Lakshmi Narayan become Lakshmi Narayan? Because that kind of completes the cycle. So how did the deity become the deity from David? It's like working backwards, reverse psychology.
Interesting when you're saying it through the looking glass, if you believe the possibility of something coming, it's like there's another saying also, which is, argue for your limitations and sure enough they're yours. So it's like this thing of no limitations when there's no limitations. I remember one time actually in a personal meeting, Baba in Om Shanti Bhavan, and he was speaking to me and it was almost like it was so far away from what I was, that what Baba was speaking, that I almost looked behind and was thinking if he was speaking to someone was behind me, you know, because what he was saying was like something which I didn't feel at that time, you know. But when he was saying that, it's like, of course, Baba sees us trickle-dashi, so he sees a whole cycle, but he sees our perfect form also. And it's like this whole, I think, the becoming of that is like what we're doing every day, yeah? Every day. And I feel that when I'm really, it's like almost, okay, Baba sometimes says now or never, yeah? The saying of now or never, that, okay, if you do it now or you never do it. And it's almost like when we become more and more back to a space where I can really be 100% where I am. Because I think for me this has been part of the journey also. Can I do every action I'm doing and be really, really conscious doing that? And when I've had this practice of doing that, it means that everything actually then becomes complete in a sense of I use my time in a worthwhile way. It means I'm really doing what I need to be doing and want to be doing also. And it's almost like a feeling then it's not doing an action out of I feel I have to do this, but do you really want to be doing it? So it means then the attention and all the psyche is embedded in that action. So it becomes very refined, very concentrated, in a sense perfect as well. It's like there's a lot of attention to detail that when I do that action, to do it really accurate and in a sense refined. But to try to move in that space where, okay, whatever I'm doing, be very present in where I am. And it's almost like the feeling, that's a feeling of also of, I feel, in golden age, we're 100% soul conscious, so it means we're 100% present. We're totally, in a sense, ever ready to the extent that the intellect is not pulled to the future and it's not pulled to the past. It's like you're fully aware as a conscious being. And I feel the more I can move in that sort of space, it means that it's like, and it's almost like a feeling of that eternity as well, because we know as Baba speaks of the cycle that it's a repetition and it's everything that's happening is accurate. But how is my mind accepting that? Especially when scenes come in front of us where we might think that's not right or that should be another way, or, you know, the question thing of what's happening in drama. And I feel that, excuse me, when I'm able to sit in that space, when there's a full acceptance of everything that's happening, then there's a feeling also there's more love for things, there's more compassion, there's more, all the qualities actually will emerge through that space, because it means there's nothing that's happening in front of me which is outside the rails of drama. It's a full acceptance. What I do in the moment, that's of course my choice and I have to act, but actually what's happening in front of me, there's a full acceptance. So that
sounds like you're aiming to operate from a very pure presence. It's almost like whatever task you're in the now, it's pure presence, because that is building that sanskara which will operate in the golden age, isn't it? If we don't build that sanskara now of the purity of the moment, we're not going to have it to take with us, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like your practice of being in the moment, fully engaged, is creating that sanskara that is most needed.
Yeah, because also it's like, I guess with our karma, our past, and it's like we're settling all that, isn't it? We're settling our past karma, all the attachments, any threads of anything in the past, we're trying to, our practices to remove that. So as we become more and more free in that sense, it means we can be present and we can be very present in what we're doing. It's like, it means that becomes the most important process. And in a real sense too, we're never in any other place but the present.
Absolutely.
I mean, our mind can be in the past and we can be thinking of future, but where we are is, but how much are we conscious of that? And of course we have to be free of all past things and the intellect not pulled to things or others or anything to be really in that space. And of course there's the super sensuous joy of that is in that present moment too. Because we just experience the beauty and wonder of the drama. You know, there's a real real feeling also that it is just a game, it's just a play, and all these different actors, the good guys, the bad guys, so to speak. But in a sense, as drama is, I remember Bridge Malambai with his one of his recent famous quotes, you know, saying what is right is right and what is wrong is right in drama. So, and that's sort of like the sort of thing of seeing things just as it is, not sort of labelling it right or wrong, but just sort of that it is drama. And
so, Brother Jeff, how did the deity go from, how did that deity get there?
It's just probably a long road of efforts. I haven't really, Baba says our perfect form is in the subtle regions, like in Vishnupuri, you know, that level. And of course, it's where all the trance messengers go. If they want to see something in heaven, they go to that level. But for me, I've never really, I honestly practice what it's like being in a deity body. I practice what it's like being a virtuous soul, of course, controlling the old, the bad sanskaras, you know, not putting them into practice. But in terms of trying to feel what it's like to actually be deity, be a deity, I haven't really gone into that much. I'm constantly thinking about, watching nature, like David was saying, I love watching the animals. I've been doing it not because of any physicality, like I was standing up at David's this morning out the back, and there was this bird, it's a black and white bird, but it has this very crisp, clear sound, you know, that black and white bird. And it was just right next to me, and it was just hopping around, so I was just very still, and I was just watching it, and I was smiling. So I guess because I was in a nice peaceful stage and I was happy that it was there, it was happy to be there and just hop around like in front of me, you know. So I think in that sort of consciousness, when I consciously look at it, I think the deities are like that as well. They're happy to be there and they're happy to be involved with nature, like the animals, flowers, everything, that's there. But for me, I like keeping the Golden Age alive through reading quite a few things. There's bits and pieces you can get from different literature that talk about heaven, you know, and what it's like. And even scientifically, you find that some of the animals, like I'm here in Bharat, so I came across a couple of extinct animals, you know, that must have been in the Golden Age, but they've only died out recently, maybe in the last 1,000 years, that were only in India, you know. And so scientists have very funnily called one a Shiva therium, you know, called Shiva's beast, and its cousin, a smaller cousin called a Brahma therium. So I don't know why scientists have called them that, you know, the beast of Brahma and the beast of Shiva too. So, but they're quite amazing looking animals, you know, they're quite exotic, you know. So, I consciously like sort of like picking up on those sorts of bits of things because it adds to the overall picture of the variety in heaven. It's not just, I guess, you see what's in the pictures that are painted, you know, there's a whole lot going on. Sort of like that obviously never gets really talked about. Because if you think about it, it's a city of around about 1 million people. And if you've ever seen a city of 1 million people, like in Australia we have Perth, which is the most isolated city in the world, but that's 1 million people. And that's actually very big, you know. And so a civilization with 1 million people has a lot going on, you know, all the time, you know. So in that sort of thing, I like thinking about that sort of, I guess that's called geopolitical something or another, social sort of civilization, what actually, how it works and what actually goes on. So I also like thinking consciously about that sort of stuff, because, I mean, there's all sorts of trades there. You know, you've got gem cutters and furniture builders and anyone who's here, except for the impure trades, I mean, is there, you know, doing their bit, creating this sort of amazing civilization in a world that's, you know, completely pure and amazing, you know, so...
I mean, there's one aspect that Baba talks about, that everyone in the Golden Age will be so happy doing what they're doing. It's not like
no matter
the
what
world
they're
now,
doing,
people wake
yeah.
up on Monday morning and it's a headache before they start the day.
No
just
weekend
the thought of
there.
Going to work, you know. I think both of you are doing things that you enjoy, which is a real fortune, isn't it? But so many in the world are, you know, they work because they have to for whatever reason. But in the Golden Age, you know, just that thought that everyone, whatever they're doing, they love doing it. And so that sanskara also has to be created now.
Mm.
And maybe looking at both of you, you have created a life for yourself where you are doing things that you enjoy. There may be others out there on the spiritual path who are not doing, they're still going to work, they're still maybe in their families and they've got a lot of complications, they're, you know, maybe they're a bit up to here with emails, you know, what advice could you give to us? How did you create this wonderful life?
Good question. It's like saying, how did you create your part? Yeah. If the part is already recorded. But it's like, I think there's many things even today in the old world, you know, where there's different spiritual teachers and all this, which, you know, say you should, you know, if you're doing something, you must love what you're doing. So, and don't stop looking until you find that what you really love doing. And I think even in Baba said in the Merlis, you know, like if service is done and you're not happy doing that service, then it's not really service, you know. So you must be happy internally. But of course, that whole process of getting to a space where you're like that, I think that's all of our journeys, you know, because even here in, for example, in Gyan Srova, you know, people come from outside and they say, this is heaven. You know, this is paradise, you know, they walk around, everyone's happy and smiling and there's a garden and it's quiet and silent and the birds and the, like, in retrospect to many places they come and of course it is like a paradise for them, it's really that experience. But, it's like, how do we, you know, as I think we all know too, in our own experiences, we can be in the best of places, but internally, if we're not in that right space of consciousness, it can be either heaven or it can be hell. Yeah. Yeah, even though physically we might be in a beautiful place. So it's almost like it's like how to create that, you know, like naturally. And I think it's sort of like, it's an ongoing practice. No, it's like how to, if I'm really want to be in a place where, you know, I want to have liberation in life, which is, that's Golden Age, yeah, liberation in life. Now we have liberation, we go to soul world, but to have the experience of liberation in life, it means I have to be free of all my past and work in a way where really, I mean, of course, that's a step-by-step process for all of us, how we really become liberated in life, you know, because it might be a, you know, slowly, slowly undoing past things which have been a bondage, a feeling of bondage, to get to a point where I really feel free, you know, and free in the sense of that it's really my choice in what I want to do, the action. Within the guidelines, of course, of Brahman life and the whole thing, but really there is something, I think, for everyone that's a part where it's really, when you find that, you really love doing it. And then, of course, what happens in a practical way too, time disappears. As we all know, when we do something we really love doing, we're not looking at the watch every half an hour, you know, every 10 minutes, you know, when's this going to be over? See, the time just disappears. Hours can go past and we have no, it just flies in that sense, the time flies. So I think that's very connected as well.
And it's, I think it's like, because like you do what you really love doing, but then you started doing it for Bubba. So it's like what Bubba says, when you have a skill and you use it in Bubba's service, it gets multiplied, and then so your stage gets multiplied as well. You know, your happiness gets multiplied because you're getting, you're using it for Bubba's task. So you know, Bubba's happy that you're doing it, so you get Bubba's blessings for using that skill. And that was like for computers as well. You know, I mean, it was Bubba's fault that I got into computers, you know, because at Amrit Vela I asked Bubba what should I do for a job, because I had no money and no job, you know, and one word came in my head, computers, and I'd never seen a computer before, you know, but when I got into them I found I understood them. So but then I started using it for Bubba's service. So, and I've never actually used the skills I have, like in animation, for anything Lockic. It's all been for Bubba's service. So I guess it is like what Bubba says, if you use a particular quality or skill that you have and you use it in Bubba's service, it multiplies and multiplies and multiplies your fortune as well. So very fortunate to have that sort of like, you know, and do something you like, have that skill and then use it for service as well in that way.
So yes, because like I'm even looking at the journey that this soul's been on, and probably my greatest fear was public speaking. I remember the first time, you know, I had to speak for 4 minutes. I mean, you can't believe how long I practiced. And then they came up to me, and I think Sudesh Didi was part of the program, and they said, she's running late, so, you know, we might have to skip your part. I mean, the relief to hear that was just phenomenal. And then they came back, and then I started having a thought, oh, but I, you know, Bab, I did put in a lot of practice, you know, like, so I didn't want to do it, but there was part of me that said, you know, you've got to break through, haven't you? And then they came back and said, no, it's fine. And I remember just going up there on the stage and remembering Baba. I just don't know what I said, but you know, that was kind of like, you know, the breakthrough, isn't it? And I think that, you know, as you're saying that Baba takes us kind of raw, like, you know, he's the potter, isn't he? He's, you know, I think some souls are kind of maybe easier to mold. I remember saying to Baba that, you know, by the time I came in, I'd kind of, the diamond was a bit kind of covered with a lot of dust and dirt. But he's the potter, and he'll take a good bit of clay and make it into a nice pot, or he'll take, you know, a bit of clay that's not so great, and, you know, he'll work with it to make it. And, you know, God has come, and he's God, and he's going to get his task done, and he wants us all to be deities. You know, he doesn't want to fail. He's God, right? So somehow we have to kind of go with the process, somehow kind of get into the God groove of becoming a deity. So, Jeff.
I was going to say, I think he knows that his task doesn't fail.
Yes.
It can't fail. But one of the hardest things to actually, for me, was to be intoxicated about is that Bubba's creating heaven for us. I mean, you know, because I think during bhakti our self-esteem became so low, you know, bowing in front of deities or in front of others, and, you know, thinking of us as so impure that Bubba's actually here and he's building a whole world for us, and we'll be the masters of the universe. No, the masters of the world, you know. So, I mean, it's to feel that in terms of that Bubba's actually creating it for us, you feel that, you know, wow, I mean, Bubba's making all that effort for me and for us, you know, so that we can live in a really, really nice world. So,
and I think too, it's like, you know, we are already that, you We are the deity. It's like it's a matter of peeling back all the layers of body consciousness. And as we practically do that through our meditation tapasya, then the insight into that and the feeling of that becomes slowly, bit by bit, more and more real. So it's like we are that already. Of course, there's, you know, we have to believe that too, that we are that. And I think everyone that's here, does believe that, because otherwise they wouldn't be here, those souls, you know, our souls. So it's almost like as we step through this journey now, it's like slowly that real reality of that experience of all the golden-aged things that Baba speaks about become real for ourselves. They become where we are, you know, we are becoming that, you know, perfect being in that sense, you know. So it's, and of course it's a matter of, you know, to keeping on that journey. And, you know, sometimes we fall down, we have to get up, and we learn that lesson. We think, wow, you know, just to be like this and this, and it has this repercussion or that repercussion, which pulls my intellect back into the past or whatever. So you don't want to do that again, you know, because you think, no, how can I be now where I'm really with Baba, really with that feeling of attainment that we get from Baba, that to have that sort of all the time, that I'm feeling really that attainment, all the gifts, all the qualities, all the specialties which make up the golden-aged world in ourselves. So it's really an internal space where, you know, as we all know, we might just go in front of a flower or a garden and that, you know, the beauty of that, you know, we sort of, and, you know, whereas if we're not in that state, we can walk through that and not even see it at all. We won't feel that, you know. So it's really that step-by-step process to come back to that, who we really are.
It seems like quite an important ingredient is intoxication, you know, and some kind of practice that's going on kind of from inside out, you know, that keeps that intoxication alive. I don't know if you use, it's almost like, how do we keep that intoxication of the golden age in everyday life? Now, you've talked about being in the moment and being focused on a task, but there's quite a lot that has to be going on, isn't it? Being soul conscious, bringing Baba into the moment, performing a task, and some kind of intoxication. And I'm wondering if some of the titles that Baba gives us help, because behind these titles there's virtues and there's powers. Because really, when you're in a virtue and the feeling of a virtue, there's a kind of natural intoxication of that. I don't know what your thoughts on this are, that it's really Baba talks about the inculcation of the virtues that's kind of going to be the sanskaras that we carry with us. So how do we keep our intoxication high?
I mean, for me, it's more been just a practice of yoga. I mean, and experience that. I mean, I like traveling the three worlds. I mean, I've always done that. I mean, when I came to Baba, I mean, the last Merli of the season, I was here in 1986, the last Merli of the season, and it was about the point-like state and how the point-like state leads to a more permanent avyat state. So I still practice that even like 36 years later, you know, that state, because otherwise I can't experience the subtler regions, you know, unless I can focus or just experience that in yoga, and then being able to direct my mind up above, either to the soul world, subtler region, or even project my mind into the future, into the golden age, you know, and start to experience that, you know, now while I'm here. So I mean, yeah, I think for me it's just the yoga, and that's what I concentrated on in Australia for 2 years in lockdown. So I really took a lot of benefit from lockdown, actually. And Australia was pretty tough, and Melbourne even tougher. So, I mean, so it was a good chance.
Anything you'd like to say about intoxication?
Yeah, I think the intoxication is firstly with churning of thinking of things of golden age, of how things are like. I mean, there's an intoxication through the knowledge through that. But I guess sort of from my experience in where we are now, the intoxication more becomes a joy or probably more towards a super sensuous joy of attainment, really, the attainments of what Baba's giving us and experiencing that, and almost like then the soul is singing the song of that attainment, you know, and singing a song not necessarily through a song or a singing, actually singing, but means you're going to be, your actions are going to be such where it's like, it's obvious, you know, the soul is intoxicated and experiencing that through its actions and its part, you know. It's like almost, I mean, I think we all observe that now. If we see someone who's intoxicated, what do they look like, you know? What does somebody that's intoxicated look like? You know, it's like they're going to be, you know, bubbling with joy and sort of like enthusiastic and cooperative and happy and, you know, like ever ready. You know, like there's nothing that's going to be a problem of anything, you know. So there's that intoxication inside of us that we're really experiencing, you know, what Baba's actually teaching us. So, yeah, I think even personally for myself, I remember once Nawarbhai saying to me, he said, oh, you're doing these museums and creating these museums, you know, you should be proud of that. Because I think he was seeing me that I was a bit sort of detached from it, or, you know, that, okay, we created something, but then it may be a bit too detached of the thing. So I thought about that afterwards. I thought, well, I don't have the ego of doing that, but I don't think of it much either as well. Maybe I should think more of that, of what, you know. So I think that side for me personally is maybe to reemerge that more and more, as the intoxication of, you know, maybe what we're becoming. Sometimes others can see us in a way and we don't see ourselves in that way either, you know. So I think for all of us it does take a constant sort of rekindling that and realizing who we are, who we're becoming.
And I guess the last thing, because, you know, when we're in the golden age, we live together as a divine family. You know, Baba has very clearly said this is the family path, and, you know, he said today that, you know, we're all going to be a family there. So I'm wondering, as a family, as Baba's family now at the confluence age, if more of us started thinking, maybe not a thinking process, more experiencing the golden age, you know, put importance on it, that it's so important to be going into that experience and nurturing that and growing it and believing it, and that we'll all kind of shift, start a bigger shift. I don't know what your thoughts on this are, that do we need to be a bit more focused on the golden age now?
I had an interesting experience. I had a vision. It was a vision once. For some reason, I found myself in the subtle region. I think it was during a bhati at a retreat center. And Mama and Baba were there, and a whole lot of other Brahmins were there. And Mama and Baba were talking about the virtues of the Brahmin family, the qualities of the Brahmin family. And then, all the positive points, not looking at defects or anything like that. So, and then we all, it was quite amazing, we all went up like a giant lift, and we were standing on top of a hill and we were overlooking this palace I mentioned earlier in the golden age. And then Mama and Baba started talking about the same values that are in the Brahmin family, that we see now are all there in the golden age, in the values and the virtues of the deities as well. But it all starts here at the confluence age. So our vision on everyone, how we treat each other, how we see each other, treat everyone with respect. You know, everyone has their part, you know, doesn't matter what they like, you know, all the sanskaras now are very temporary, like all the defects that we might see. Like Baba says, you see but don't see, you know, but just concentrate on the virtues. And I think all of that for the golden age starts now. So if we practice this now, I think we automatically get an intoxication of what it's going to be like sort of later on.
Because this Baba has the image of Lakshmi Narayan as the aim and objective, and that picture is quite Indian looking. But I remember kind of it was kind of like an experiment, but I didn't realise at the time it was. But I remember it was about the second year when I came to Madhavan, which is quite a few years ago now, and I sent that picture to everyone. You know, you get the little postcard, so I made it into a kind of postcard on the back, and I sent it to everyone, and I remember one person said, "Oh, please send more pictures like that." So there's something about that picture, and one of them was went to work. I thought, this is a big risk, right? So I sent it to work, and they put it on the message board, and, you know, messages came off that board. That picture stayed there. It was almost like there was some kind of protection around that picture. That picture stayed there for years. I don't know what happened after I left, but, you know, everything changed on that board, but that picture stayed there. And so I just wondered if you have any thoughts about this image that Baba puts of Lakshmi Narayan, because I think sometimes many of us from the West maybe have a little resistance to this picture. I don't personally, I've got a tin plate of it in my room, but sometimes people do have resistance. But I think there is something about that, the aim and object, there's some kind of protection in it. I don't know, any thoughts about that, David?
Yeah, I remember when I come into Gyan in 84, and I think that calendar, there's a famous calendar that came out in 84 with the deities. There was Lakshmi and Narayan, and there was Krishna, and then there was Mama, and I think Saraswati, like all the beautiful coloured pictures. But yeah, it's almost like sometimes I think, okay, there's Lakshmi and Narayan, or Narayan in that, obviously, you know, the royal dress and all the jewellery and the crown and all this, but sometimes I think, okay, I'm sure they're not in that all the time. I mean, they're doing other actions and activities where they may not have on all this.
Apparently, that's their coronation dress. So they only wear it once in their life.
So
the full regalia. It's like, you know, when the queen gets crowned, she's completely dressed up. So
it's like photos, you know, like, okay, we've got a photo. You capture one photo, and that's one moment in time you've captured. And then we use that photo, but then what about all the other time, you know? So it's a feeling of course, Brahma Baba had that also. He used to keep a picture of Narayan in his pocket because that was his aim and object, to become Narayan. So that was his reminder. He'd bring that out and obviously churn about, you know, what is the qualities of Narayan or that deity. But I think it comes more than that, as like in our whole being has to become that, you know, and that image of course is there, but then, you know, like, okay, all the other actions and even in with the artwork I've seen over the years with the artists that have come to paint pictures of golden age, there's two things which are always a little bit controversial, is the dress and the buildings. So if you paint a picture of the deities, for a Westerner, for example, to paint a picture of the deities, for the Bharatwasis, they look at it and say, no, that's not Lakshmi Narayan, no. The dress is not properly. It has to be like this, this, this and this. Because in India here, of course, they've had so many pictures of the deities that the dress is like this and portrayed as this, so if it's different. And of course the buildings, because buildings, if to create something which is really not of this world, as like it creates you have to have that imagination and, okay, how will things be in Golden Age? How will the buildings be and all this? So, but of course, nature, everyone will accept. If you have a beautiful river and the trees and the birds and the animals and the greenery, flowers, all these beautiful things of nature, everyone's really happy with. But as soon as you put the buildings and the people, it's like, okay, there's some... So it's interesting now.
Because that's all an interpretation, isn't it, of what current visions are like. Like the buildings mostly look like Rajasthan palaces, like of the Golden Age, you know. But of course, working in stone at the end of the cycle is vastly laborious and more difficult than working with gold in the Golden Age, you know. So in the Golden Age, you'll be able to make all sorts of different shapes and sizes and patterns and, you know, floral decorations within the building, you know, that aren't depicted in the pictures simply because it's so easy for them to do that there. Whereas here, it's very, very hard to do that because you have to do it with stone or concrete or, you know, something like that. So, I mean...
And my feeling is also that, has been that... You know, matter is quite dense now, and in the Golden Age it'll be maybe
lighter,
more fluid, you know, so it's like of a different quality. So with our consciousness now, we can use our imagination, but maybe it's very different than any of the pictures.
Interesting you say that. I remember once in Manesar, outside of Delhi, where Daddy Gulzar used to stay before ORC. So this was in the mid 80s, early 90s, and I remember I painted this picture of Brahma Baba, Shiv Baba, and the idea was to have the lights in a certain way where Brahma Baba would disappear and you'd end up with this point of light. So when I painted this picture with this airbrush, I said to Daddy Gulzar, I said, Daddy, is this the colour of Soul World, you know, this golden red colour? And she said, no. She said, no, that's not the colour of soul. I said, well, it's golden red colour, you know, which I thought that was the closest to soul world when Baba says soul world's a golden red colour. And she said, no, it's a spiritual light, you know. And so I went through these colours and I showed Daddy, and none of the colours which were in the palette, what we use now, were what she sees in the subtle world and of soul world, you know. So afterwards I thought, wow, I said, if that's not the colour, then all these pictures, they're just a symbolic sort of thing. And then, of course, for each one of us, how we see that is different too. Because then I remember going to seniors and painting some pictures for them, and what they liked to see as a picture of even just Shiv Baba, I mean, everything, of course, is a point in the middle, but outside of that point, it can be almost any colours, you know. So that was an interesting thing. And I'm sure, you know, in Golden Age, they say there's more colours than what it is there is now. It's a whole different spectrum of the light in that sense. So, quite amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just when we ask these questions, like, I'm just seeing the time now, but... Just when we ask these questions, like both of you have said, you know, if these are the flowers of the end of the Iron Age, and yet they're still, you know, if you think something like the iris, it's so royal, that flower is so royal, then what possibly, you know, are the flowers like in the Golden Age? And that kind of transports us. So nature is a very useful vehicle. I don't know if there's any just last thought, Jeff, that you'd like to give, to share, to finish off, because we're having a video again at the end.
I think just for, I mean, for everyone, I mean, for me anyway, it's been practicing more, I mean, thinking about it more, practicing more in yoga. I mean, I've been doing... concentrating on service through the mind, but at the same time, I mean, like what you're saying, you look at nature, but it's not just looking at the nature now, but it's looking at it with a different kind of perspective, as to almost projecting what it's going to be like in the golden age, and so you're actually thinking about, you're still thinking about the golden age while looking on at the nature now, because you're actually, you know, we know we're in the iron age, and we know the matter is not, it's at its lowest point. But like you said, you know, the flowers, I was looking at the flowers outside Bubba's room here, you know, there's these big trumpet flowers, you know, and I was saying, wow, it's amazing, and there'll be like at least a dozen different varieties of those in the golden age, which would be sort of like more beautiful, you know. So that does help. It's a trigger to get you thinking about the golden age, what's in the golden age, and try and experience. And I think we need to do that more and more. And it's like what the daddy says, the more you think about it, the closer it will come, you know. That we have to, I mean, if you look at the world, like you said at the beginning, the world is suffering, so we really have to bring it sort of closer now so that everyone can see, you know, that, you know, maybe there is something on the horizon that is much better than what everyone's seeing in the world.
Yeah, it seems like there needs to be some practice that we all have that builds a intoxication in us now, but that's very linked to the sanskaras now that will be carried forward, because that's what Baba says will go with us. It's the sanskara set, the golden age sanskara set that's formed at the confluence age. So thank you very much, Brother David and Brother Jeff, for kind of transporting us there. I feel like our Amrit Velas tomorrow will be more golden age. Maybe Baba will give us all a gift tomorrow, because we've thought about it and we've talked about it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
was in unison. And in this world of perfection, when we come together, each expression, each thought, each word, each action is wrapped in the purest and most divine love. In the Golden Age, every expression I have is an expression of pure joy. The purest, most innocent, most childlike joy. Every day is a day to express and to share the highest of human values. In the Golden Age, when we come together, we have a silent understanding, a silent knowing of how to be. We govern, we live. We interact in the most natural of ways. Just like the purest water flowing in the streams, we flow towards each other and through each other. As though we are one. Together, each one of us makes up this wondrous, beautiful, grand tapestry of life. We human souls, the animal world, nature, the elements, all of us together make up this wondrous world where oneness is the theme. Unity knits us all together. Each day is a day in which we discover and we experience the beauty of life and the beauty of each other. The law of life is simply to share. I share my uniqueness with you. You share your uniqueness with me.
Each one of us is like a unique flower with our own unique and brilliant scent. And the fragrance of our virtues is what enables the kingdom to function with complete ease. With the most gentle of energies. With the most harmonious feelings between each one of us. Life running the kingdom, being together, is simply a game. Every moment, every second is a game.
Love.
natural law of respect. The natural law of unity.